This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey, hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I am your co-host, Ben.
And today we're talking about Miss Dorothea Puente. And
Mandy's
she is...
grandma.
Shut up. She's not my grandma. She looks like, well, she doesn't look like my grandma, but she looks like a grandma, which is when I've got some video clippings of her in her interrogation. And I just want to smack top and be like, let that poor little grandma go. Even though I know she's a horrible, evil person. She's very convincing. Very convincing.
And it seems like most of her crimes, because she did crimes for like ever.
Yeah.
But most of her bad crimes were when she was like an old grandma.
Well, yeah, for the most part. Yeah. So jumping right in here, her early life. She was born January 9th, which, by the way, is my grandma's birthday, 1929, wow. To Jesse James Gray and Trudy Mae Yates. Both of her parents were alcoholics, and supposedly they abused their kids. I don't know if there's any fact to that or not, but that's the rumor that's going around about it. Now, Jesse died in 1937 of tuberculosis when she was 8, and then her mom died in 1938 in a motorcycle accident when she was 9. But she had actually lost custody right before she died. So Dorothy and her siblings went to live in this orphanage. And supposedly some relatives came to get Dorothea to live with them in Fresno. I'm not sure how long she was actually in the orphanage, but according to reports, she was abused there as well, which, I mean, as we've seen from our last one, orphanages back then weren't exactly wonderful.
And it also, like, both these cases with these orphanages really illustrate something that's pretty commonly known in the psychology world, which is we're really messed up when we're children. Like, if you're most people that have major issues other than biological predispositions, like, can be really affected by their youth, right? So these orphanages, even if they're not horrible places, wouldn't necessarily have the ability to give children the affection and attention and care that they need. But then it seems like in a lot of cases, they're just these terrible places that also are very abusive, neglectful, not necessarily feeding people right.
Yeah. And I mean, even with her, I don't think she had a chance to begin with, because I mean, even her parents were awful people. So it's just like with that predisposition of, and she's actually been, well, we'll talk about her psychology like more towards the end, but yeah, I don't think she had much of a chance, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know she was a pathological liar, and she used to tell people that she was one of 18 kids who grew up in Mexico. I don't know if she was just embarrassed of her parents and the orphanages, or if, you know, it's just one of those things where she just wanted to lie about it. I don't know.
I mean, it could be that. For me, I would think, I mean, her parents died when she was young. She's in this orphanage. She's getting beaten or abused in some way. It probably was just comforting to make up a better world.
I could see that. I can see that. Now, this chick, she liked to be married. Her first marriage was in 1946. She married a guy named Fred McFall. He's a soldier who just came back from the Pacific. He was an abusive alcoholic, and you will notice a pattern as we move through her marriages. They had two daughters between 1946 and 1948. One was put up for adoption, and another was sent to live with her relatives. And I've also seen other reports that says she's only had one kid, so I don't know which is true. But either one of the reports that I've read, the daughter was put up for adoption. So she either had, you know, $2 or $3, we're not real sure, but she did have at least one that was put up for adoption, which is good, because she is, I wouldn't want to have her as my mother. Now, McFall left her in 1948, And obviously that was a source of embarrassment for her. So she told everyone that he had died of a heart attack. And after that, for money, she forged checks. She was caught and sentenced to a year in jail, and she was paroled after 6 months. But soon after her release, she was knocked up by a man she barely knew, and she gave that kid up for adoption. So again, she could have had three kids. She could have had one. Not 100% sure on that one. Now, her second marriage, in 1952, she married Axel Johansson, and he was a merchant seaman, so he was away at sea a lot, and she wasn't exactly faithful. She apparently had a lot of men over while he was gone, and, you know, not just for pleasant little visits. She was, well, I'd say she was probably scamming them and, you know, getting hers on the side too, but I have a feeling she was definitely probably scamming them. Yeah. In 1960, she was arrested for prostitution. She was sentenced to 90 days. After she was released, she was arrested again for vagrancy. She got another 90 days. And from this point, her crime started to get a little bit more and more serious until she got a job as a nurse's aide.
And that part confuses me so much. Why? It's like, look at her track history. Like, I mean, I get it. Like, things are probably a little stricter now, a little easier to figure out people's pasts. Like,
yeah.
How do you get a job as a nurse's aide with her background?
Honestly, I think she's a chameleon. I mean, she is very, because I know like in the 70s, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, she would revamp herself a little bit.
Right.
But
right.
I don't know. It's,
she must have been a good talker.
She had to have been, because she got away with so much and such, you know, in this time period. It's really, she's either really, really good, or our parole system is really, really bad, which I personally think is both, but yeah. But as I said, she got a job as a nurse's aide. She cared for the elderly and disabled people in their private homes, which that is scary, because I'm sure she was, you know, scamming off of them too, because that's pretty much her MO for everything. Oh, yeah. But that particular job line led her to managing a boarding house. 1966, she divorced Axel. It was a violent 14-year marriage. So apparently he beat her up and abused her and all that stuff. Again, nice little pattern she's got going here. Now, her third marriage, in 1968, she married Roberto Puente, which, you know, she kept the name pretty much throughout the rest of her life. I'm not sure why, but she did. Now, he was 19 years younger than she was, and he cheated on her frequently. So the marriage only lasted about 2 years. But before she divorced him, she took over a 3-story, 16-bedroom care home at 2100 F Street in Sacramento. Now, that's just right down the road from the infamous house that she took over eventually here shortly. Her fourth, at the 2100 F Street, that she cared for the homeless of the area. So again, she's doing whatever she's doing. Now, the fourth marriage, she married Pedro Montalvo in 1974. Again, another abusive alcoholic. The marriage barely lasted a few months. This is kind of around the time when she started to reinvent herself. She made herself look older, more vulnerable, more sweet, you know, the trusting grandma type. And she frequented bars looking for older men. She'd forge their signatures and would steal their money. Eventually, she got caught and was charged with 34 counts of treasury fraud. Now, while on probation, she still committed the same fraud scheme. So she's got balls. I'll give her that.
Yeah. She's not learning her lesson, though.
Oh, no. She didn't learn her lesson up to the day she died.
Yeah.
Now, the first signs of trouble while she was at 2100 F Street, she hired this local homeless man who, I guess everybody just called him Chief, to do odd jobs for her around her house. Then the neighbors started noticing him bringing wheelbarrows full of dirt from her basement, and a concrete flooring was laid down in the basement. And after that, he took the garage down and put in another concrete slab. Well, Chief mysteriously disappeared after that job was done. So I'm sure he's probably underneath one of those slabs or somewhere, yes, buried somewhere. Now comes in 1426 F Street. And this is the infamous house. And you can actually still go by this house because it's historically preserved in Sacramento. And from what I've read, the current owners are very cool. And I don't know if they do home tours anymore, but they have a, they've reinvented the house. Let's just put it that way. Now, she began renting that location in 1981, and there was an apartment in the upstairs area. That's where she actually lived. In 1982, she took on a roommate and a business partner. They opened a little cafe. Her partner's name was Ruth Monroe, and she was 61 at the time. Now, let's talk about the murders. So, 1426 F Street became the boarding house, and from the time she operated it, she was, like I said, she had to be a very good talker because she was loved in the community. She gave to like all the political parties, you know, she would cook massive amounts of food and feed like her entire community. So it's like, I imagine it was like a block party or something along those lines, like Taco Tuesday or something. But her tenants had mixed opinions of her. Some said that she was stingy and wouldn't give them their mail or the money. And from what I understand, she would get them to sign their pension checks over to her for accommodations and expenses and things like that. And she would give them an allowance. Why anybody would do this to begin with, I don't know. But I don't know. She's must have been just incredibly convincing. Now, others said that they liked her small acts of kindness and generous homemade meals. Shortly after Ruth moved in, she died of an overdose of codeine and Tylenol. And Dorothea told the cops that Ruth had been depressed because her husband was terminally ill, which was true. So cops ruled it as a suicide. Nobody else saw anything about it. A few weeks later, 74-year-old Malcolm McKenzie accused her of drugging and stealing from him. So the cops came back. She was arrested. She was convicted of 3 charges of theft and sentenced to 5 years. And I just want to say this, even a prison, the outside world is not safe. Because she began this pen pal relationship with this guy named Everson Gilmouth. And I guess they got really close while she was in prison, because when she was released, he actually picked her up in a red 1980 Ford pickup. And there is a reason I'm telling you the color and the make and model, which we'll come to here in just a couple minutes. So they got serious quickly, which I'm sure was probably just a ploy on her part to do whatever she needed to do to survive, because her killings were financially motivated. So she's not like Ted Bundy, where, you know, everything's sexual and really sadistic and things like that. So, I mean,
if you look at all her crimes, they were financially motivated, right? She's basically just a survivalist. She's doing fraudulent checks. She's doing prostitution.
I don't think she was killing to kill. She was killing to get that money to keep coming in and, you know, to keep from being caught.
I think if she had found a way. No, not at all. But I think if she had found a way to steal everyone's money without them ever complaining or getting her in trouble, she wouldn't have killed anybody.
I think you're probably right about that. Yeah. But I mean, I don't even think she would have been that good to be able to, you know, stave people off for that long. I think, you know, like you said, she's a total survivalist. So
yeah,
unfortunately people had to pay the price for that. Back to Mr. Gilmouth, they actually opened a joint bank account and they rented the 1426 F Street again. She got it back. Again, they were living in the upstairs apartment. November 1985, she hired Ishmael Flores to install wood paneling up in the apartment. And when he was done with that, she also asked him to build her a box that was 6 feet by 3 feet by 2 feet for storage. Kind of an odd measurements. He did. Yeah. And she packed it full of whatever she said. She packed it full of books, whatever it was, and she nailed it shut. So obviously it was too big and too heavy for her to carry by herself. So she got poor Ishmael to, you know, pick it up and put it in his truck and take it to wherever. Actually, she originally said it was going to be put in storage. And by the way, her compensation to him was cash, but it was also a red 1980 Ford pickup truck, which is where the box was, what the box was hauled in. So I'm sure you can kind of, even without realizing the dimensions of the box, figure out what the hell's inside of it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why, like, once he's got this box and he's hauling it away, he's like, not like, I probably should look in this box. I get it that she's this pretty conniving little old lady that he's probably like totally snowed by, but the dimensions are a coffin. I mean, it's,
well,
you're
going
to look at it no matter what and be like, this is a coffin. Like, you would, it would weigh about what a coffin would weigh. You think you'd be like, drive like a mile and then be like, I'm looking in this shit.
Well, she was with him, so he couldn't.
Oh, she was with him. Okay. Yeah. I thought she sent him to dump it alone.
Oh,
okay.
No, she was with him. So yeah, there's no peeking in this coffin.
Gotcha.
I mean, I would think he would have suspicions about it, but he just got a truck that worked perfectly and cash and, you know.
Yes. And you know what that really does? Makes it even more suspicious. So this dude just wanted that damn truck. Because, like, if you're giving me cash in a vehicle and telling me you need help moving this 6-foot by 2-foot box, I know you killed somebody.
Well, I mean, she told him that the truck belonged to her friend in LA who didn't need it anymore. So I guess titles weren't important back then. I don't know. I don't know how titles worked back in the 80s, but I know. I mean, maybe he was also a little intimidated by the fact that if she did kill somebody, maybe he might be next if he poked around too much. So, you know, she's obviously, and again, she may have just been that good at convincing him, you know, what was up. But on the way towards the storage area, she had him pull over and dump the box on the riverbank on the Garden Highway. And she told him that it contained junk, that it wasn't anything, you know, significant. So
now, again, not to go back into the suspiciousness of this, you're basically moving a coffin. Actually, you are moving a coffin. But even if you didn't know that, you're basically moving a coffin. You're being given a truck. You're being given cash. She wants to put this in storage. And then all of a sudden says, you know what? Let's just dump it over here. It's really worthless. How do you not say, ma'am, this is a body?
Well, I mean, apparently the area that they were dumping in was like a place where I guess a lot of people used as a dump, you know, for household shit they didn't want or whatever. But, you know, again, he might have been afraid of her.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were by yourself with somebody with this little old supposed lady who apparently killed this guy, I mean, would you want to say anything?
I mean,
I'd wait until I dropped her off and be like, I'm calling the cops.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have done that. I would have at some point, but that doesn't happen, obviously, because she goes on for a long time doing bad stuff.
Yes, she does. And January 1st, 1986, a fisherman actually spotted the box and he called the cops. I guess he didn't want to look in it, which I can't say that I really blame him on that one. So the cops came, opened it, and they found a badly decomposed body. And because of the decomposition, they weren't able to identify the body for at least 3 years. So she continued to collect Gilmouth's pension, and she even wrote letters to his family stating that, you know, he hadn't really been in contact because he had been sick. Now, she maintained a room and board at the 1426 F Street, and she took in 40 new tenants. God help these people. She was popular with social workers because she would take in the tougher clients, like the drug addicts and the people who had, you know, mental disorders and things like that. And she supposedly was very sweet, I guess, on the surface. But the weird thing is part of her parole, because again, you remember she used to forge checks and things like that. So part of her parole was that she was supposed to stay away from all government checks. And she was visited at least 15 times by parole agents to check on her situation and check to see what's happening. Now, she's openly and honestly having these people sign their pension checks over to her. And she's also taking them and giving them stipends and then pocketing the rest of the money. Not one of these damn parole agents noted any kind of violations whatsoever.
Yeah. Honestly, and like, none. Also, I just feel like this is just a travesty of people not looking into her stuff, right?
Yeah.
They're not looking into her past. They're not looking into, because also from the documentary that was on Netflix that has her in it, they discuss that she also, part of her parole, she's not allowed to have boarders.
Yeah.
I mean, she can have like a live-in boyfriend or a husband, but she can't have like boarders that like pay her in any sort of way. And she's got many, right?
Well, and that's another thing too, because like, aren't social workers supposed to be checking into the people that they're... Yeah,
that's what I mean. No one checked
that
anything.
That should have like flashed right out. And that one social worker, what was her name? Judy Moyes or something like that. Like the good one who is basically the reason she got caught. But I mean, it's just like, how do you not know that she's on parole and know what her restrictions are? That's what I don't understand at all.
I mean, I think she was just so deceiving that was never really a thought. To that woman, she was just looking into what happened, where'd this guy go, right? That she was her person that she had been dealing with. But it would have been much easier just to look into her past, figure out that she's not even allowed to be doing this at all, right?
Well, I think she just listened to other social workers because, like I said, you know, Dorothea was one of the few people who would take in those hard cases that not many other people would want. So I guess, I don't know. I mean, to me, that just doesn't seem, I mean, like you said, like anybody actually researched anything into this.
Dug
woman.
At all. They took everything.
But
I'll
tell you what,
value.
I'm getting ready to play some clips from her interview with the Sacramento Police Department. And it's like I said at the beginning, just watching this and just watching her, I mean, just even listening to her really, because I know podcast, obviously you can't see this video, but I am going to put it up on YouTube this afternoon. So it just watching it and listening to it, I don't know if I could have remained objective because I'm looking at this little old lady who, and I mean, body posture, she's not really moving. She's got her arms crossed. So, you know, she's a little bit closed off or whatever, but she's just so convincing. Like, I just want to hug her, you know, even though I know she's this horrible, awful person. So I'm going to cue this up here and then you can see exactly what I'm talking about. Cause it is something else.
Now the questions we need to ask you, I need all the truth from you. Okay. Number one is going back. Of course, you know, how this whole thing got started was because of this last individual,
right?
Montoya. Now his disappearance is very suspicious. I can tell you that. Even the things that you said didn't even quite connect with what the other individual told us when she spoke to you. There were a lot of inconsistencies in your statement.
Well, you know, I didn't think I was ever going to have to remember everything.
That's fine. I mean, I can understand that, and you explained that to us. But there's just a lot of inconsistencies. Also,
if they get in touch with you, I mean, wouldn't that...
I'd have to physically see.
Right.
Now, as far as the social worker, he had no relatives known to her and never mentioned of any. But he had mentioned at one time that he wanted to move from your place. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to stay there anymore. And then we talked to Mr. Sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Sharp says he hasn't seen him for 3 months. But you said the other day.
Yeah,
and the social worker hasn't seen him. So who is lying to me? Who is lying to me, Dorothea?
Well, I'm not. He was there Saturday and Sunday.
How can Mr. Sharp?
Well, he doesn't even associate with the other people.
Mr. Sharp also told us that you had told him to lie.
I did not.
About saying that he was there, because he later told us that
I
you
did
told
not.
Him to lie.
In fact, I had asked Mr. Sharp to move.
When did you ask him that?
Let's see. He couldn't pay rent 1 month, October, because he won his money.
Drinking.
Gambling.
Gambling.
I don't know if he drinks or not.
Okay.
And that was the second time that he had done that since he'd been there. And it makes it hard to come up for the rent, you know, and so he finally paid me on the third. And I asked him if he would move when his rent was...
Why would Mr. Sharp tell us...
That he's mad because I'm making him move.
And he hasn't seen you for 3 months. Also, Ben. Now, how long did Ben live there?
Just 2 months.
Okay. So Ben Fink lived there 2 months.
Right.
Did, let me see, who would have known him? Did Melvin know Ben?
Tell me. She's not convincing.
She is convincing, and I think it's because she does believe it. I think it is delusional schizophrenia traits where she actually believes the story she tells. I think she's lost in her own fantasy.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because the next part is, well, the whole interrogation is really fascinating. Just the thing she says, but the next part's really interesting. And and we're going to talk about the schizophrenic thing too in a little bit.
Now, coupled with all of that, okay,
mm-hmm.
coupled with all of that, and then we come and talk
could
to you.
Could you put a tap on my phone and listen to my conversation, like
no.
if they call me?
No.
I would like you to do that.
To me, for me to be satisfied, I would have to physically see them.
Well, then couldn't you, once when the call came through, couldn't you monitor all the calls
no.
and then put a trace on the call?
I don't know how that works, to be truthful with you.
Because I would be willing to have that done,
yeah.
you know.
But
I know he'll get in touch with me.
The other problem is this. You know, we go and talk to you. You're real good about it. And then we ask you for permission.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even have to give us permission to look. But you were cooperating. You said, sure. You gave us permission to dig around in the yard and look around. And then we dig. And lo and behold, we find what looks like the remains of a human being. Clothing and all.
But if it was Alvaro, you know, Bert.
No, I don't think it's Alvaro. I don't think Alvaro, if he was in the ground, would be that decayed, to be truthful with you.
I mean,
see what I mean though? Like we had talked about earlier where she lets them dig in the yard, right?
Yeah.
She's not worried about it. She's like, dig in the yard, tap my phone, listen to my conversations with these people. You'll see I'm telling the truth.
That like, and she's just like, I know he'll get in contact with me.
Yeah.
But you killed him. So I don't know.
She doesn't think he's dead.
I
really think she doesn't think he's dead. The only other option is that she is the best actress in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. she's if that's true, she's clearly been lying. We know that they said she was pretty much a pathological liar as a child.
Right.
She's been lying her entire life.
Yeah.
She's just really effing good at it, right?
Apparently. I mean, she's very believable.
Yeah, I mean, she's so believable that I kind of feel like she believes it. And I've definitely met people in my life where they said something to me about an incident that had happened, something at a minor level.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's not true, because I remembered 100% that it wasn't.
Right.
And they were like, no, that's really what no. Where it's like, all of a sudden it registered in my mind, this person believes it. I need to stop arguing, because there's no way that I'm going to win this argument, even though they're completely wrong. Right.
Everybody
and I
a
think
fickle that, thing.
Yeah. She has either,
but
she's either
people.
Lied so long that she's convinced herself, she's blurred it all for herself, or she really is delusional and just thinks that the events aren't what she thinks they are.
That's insane. It's
yeah.
just, it's crazy to me. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I understand memory loss and things like that, because I couldn't tell you what I said 5 minutes ago, but I think I would remember if I killed somebody. I'm pretty sure.
You would think, yes.
I would think, yeah. But then again, who knows? Maybe I have DID and I just don't know. You know, all those
right.
crazy boys.
But I mean, the one thing that makes me think she's just a good liar to mm-hmm. play that side of the coin is when she says it's not Alvaro, or is that his last name, Alvaro?
Alvaro's his first name. Montoya is his last.
Or his first name is Alvaro, yeah. When she says, I don't think it'd be Alvaro. And he says, no, if it's not Alvaro, he would not be this decomposed.
Right.
She's like, I feel like she's trying to say, it can't be the guy you're looking for. So clearly I didn't do anything. And it's like, it's a dead body in your yard. We don't care who it is at this point, right?
Exactly. I've got one more clip to play from her interview. It's a little bit longer. It's about 5 minutes long, but it's she's so fascinating to me. She really is.
Yeah.
I've got a man missing. Nothing seems, everything seems totally, nothing fits, Dorothea. That's what I'm trying to say. Nothing fits. Okay. And there's one of two things I can surmise. Okay. And that is, Mr. Montoya is dead.
No, he's not.
Okay, well, Miss Dad, I'm just saying, I'm trying to surmise this, and then we'll try to clear this up, that he is dead. And that either John McCauley or Mervin.
John.
Either killed him. Or that maybe he met foul play by your hands. That's my alternatives. I don't know. But my other alternative is that the fact that somewhere in that backyard, Dorothea, that he's lying. Maybe along with other people.
No.
Okay. And I'm also going to tell you that we had the same information a year ago. Yes. A year ago. So what I'm telling you is not new to me.
Monday, can I hire a contractor to go in and tear everything down and dig it up to prove to you that there's nobody there?
If any digging has to be done, we're going to do the digging.
Oh, okay.
Okay. What I'm trying to do is right now save a lot of painstaking trouble. A lot of time and a lot of trouble. And what I'm asking you, my bottom line, is what I'm truly asking you, Dorothea.
Sir, I have never killed anybody.
Maybe not you, but how about Mr. McCauley?
What reason would he have to kill anybody?
Well, I know we're going to find out about the checks. Okay, the mm-hmm. Social Security checks. Mm-hmm. And I know that your past, that you've been in
right.
some trouble with...
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And I know, I remember when you were arrested and you were in the beam.
Do that. I admitted to that to get the trial over with.
Okay. But you still were convicted
right.
of it and sentenced to it.
Right.
Okay. The similarities are there. The only thing that's different now is the fact, rather than take something and let it go, you get rid of them, and nothing's ever found. Now, here's a man from Costa Rica or Timbuktu that really nobody cares about. Just like, just like Mr. Kelly said, he says, hey, when you're nobody, nobody cares. So you disappear, you're a transient, or you're a bum, or you're an alcoholic.
I cared for him.
A lot of people think nobody ever cares.
I cared for him. I bought him clothes. I treated him very, very good.
Have you seen Ben Fink around?
No. I told him not to ever come back on the property.
But he was normally a regular around town. And you know what?
But he's lived in Marysville before.
Dorothea, if he'd have been in Marysville, he'd have been arrested. That's how Ben was. You know how Ben was.
No, I only knew him for 2 months.
He'd get drunk. He'd get a little, goofy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then usually end up getting arrested or taking a detox or something. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Gone. What am I to think? What am I to think after hearing this a year and following along, watching, waiting, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, I dig up a body in your backyard?
I don't know anything. I didn't even see the body.
It may be, and you may be. That may be true. That's why I'm asking you. I'm appealing to you, Dorothea.
Sir, I don't know anything.
I'm going to ask you right now again. Are there any other bodies
no.
in your backyard?
Not that I didn't even know that one was there.
Did Mr. McCauley put any other bodies in the backyard?
You have to ask Mr. McCauley.
Okay, and I intend to. Okay.
Yes.
And that's why I'm asking you. Because if it has to be said, I want it said right now. Let's clear it up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not get into something that maybe isn't there. I want
right.
to know. I want
no,
you
not...
to be truthful
Sir,
with
I
me.
Didn't even know that body was there. If I had it, I would have said, no, don't search the yard, you know. But I had nothing to hide. I don't want to go back to prison.
Well, I realize that. I realize that.
I'm an old
that.
Lady.
I realize
I'm
that,
I'm trying
too.
To get off parole. I'm trying to get my life together.
One thing I like about this is the fact that he was given her opportunity to throw shade on somebody else and she didn't.
Yeah, she really didn't. She was never going to say Mr. McCauley did it. She's like, that's between you and Mr. McCauley. I have no idea. Like, yeah, she very much was protective there.
She's... I don't know. I don't know what to think about her.
She's very, very interesting. I mean, even that last line where she says, I'm trying to get my life back together. It's like, at this point, I know they said she looks older than she is, but how old do you think she is there? Maybe like 65-ish?
She was born in 1929, so 1988. Late 60s, early 70s. Yeah. Something like that. I can't do math.
It's like, I'm trying to get off parole. I'm trying to get my life back together. I mean, just that sentence means at least some part of her consciousness is like looking to do that. I mean, I'm not saying she's trying to do it the right way. I think she really is killing people and stealing money and all that stuff. But at 60 something, she's still a fighter. She's still trying to preserve herself. She's still doing whatever she has to do to make it work, right?
Yeah, she's something else, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you got to get up for that social worker, Judy Moyes. I mean, if it hadn't been for her, I think she still would have been killing people and maybe have never been caught, you know, because this Judy, Bert Montoya, well, Alvaro, they quote unquote Bert Montoya, he was developmentally disabled, schizophrenic. Judy actually cared about him. You know, she was one, not saying that all social workers are, you know, uncaring, but I know that a lot of them have a lot of caseloads and things like that. But, you know, she's the one who reported to the police that he was missing. And, you know, November 11th, 1988 is when the cops came to her property and inquired about him. And they happened to notice a disturbed soil as well as Judy did as well. She said it looked like, you know, burial grounds, basically, when she would drive by at some point. She gave him permission to dig in her backyard, which I
because she had nothing to hide.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. So they uncovered the body of Leona Carpenter. Eventually, 7 bodies were found. And during the initial investigation, like, you know, when they were there the first time, she wasn't a suspect. They let her leave to go get coffee. And this is right before they, I think, dug up another couple bodies. Well, she fled to LA and befriended this elderly pensioner at a bar. And I'm sure, I guess they had her picture and everything up on the news because the guy recognized her and called the cops. So she was charged with a total of 9 murders. She was convicted of 3 and she was sentenced to 2 life sentences without the possibility of parole. The entire time she always maintained her innocence and that all of her tenants, quote unquote, died of natural causes. And she died in prison March 27, 2011 at the age of 82 from natural causes. So the psychology behind her in 1978, she had been diagnosed as suffering from chronic undifferentiated schizophrenia. I thought to be schizophrenic, you had to have like hallucinations and delusions.
If she believes the things she's saying, I mean, those would be considered delusions, right? She's living in a world that's not reality. Hallucinations, not necessarily. You just have to have one or the other. Or, I forget what the wording of it is, but beliefs that are like way out there. Like, for instance, thinking that the CIA is tapping your phone, right? Would be like a common schizophrenic type of belief, or thinking that satellites are monitoring everything you're doing, or that everyone's being controlled by aliens. And
that's but more honestly, like paranoid schizophrenia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which she didn't. She wasn't paranoid. But I don't know. Schizophrenic wise,
she was like the reverse of paranoid.
Yeah, she really was.
She was like the reverse of paranoid because she so much didn't believe that anything that she did what really was happening.
Right.
That she didn't think she had anything to hide or anything. And no one would ever think anything about her, right? She was invincible, really.
Or was just so callous and uncaring and unempathetic that she didn't care.
And it's possible too.
Right.
But it really did sound like when he said, no one cares about these people, no one cares about this person. She's like, I cared. I did all kinds of, it sounded like she really cared. Like that she valued that human being, but still somehow
I don't think she did
kill that human being.
I really don't think she was capable of that kind of caregiving. I don't think she had any kind of empathy whatsoever towards any of these people. I mean,
it would be hard for her to have empathy, because if you look at like her upbringing,
well, her whole alcoholic abusive relationships. I mean, she
her upbringing throughout all of that, her association of love is tied very much to abuse.
Right.
So being hateful towards someone that you love is normal for her. However, she didn't deal with people that were killing people. That was something new that she did on her own.
That we know of anyway.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, fair.
Okay, so she may have been schizophrenic. I think she was definitely narcissistic. She was a pathological liar. I think she has borderline personality. And she also had a histrionic personality because, you know, she used sex and sexual favors to get things that she wanted. A lot of her neighbors, you know, going back to the pathological lying part, she would tell her neighbors that she was a famous actress and she was like friends with, Lana Turner. I know one of those big actresses back in the 30s and 40s. I can't remember who. She also told people that she was a holistic doctor.
But like I was saying though, like the differentiation between whether or not that's a delusion or a lie is just whether or not she believes it.
Right.
Because she might.
I don't know. That just seems like an awful to believe that you're this famous actress and you're friends with some A-lister superstar, that you're a holistic doctor.
Yeah.
But I mean, she didn't actually kill anybody.
That is a symptom or a criteria of schizophrenia, though, is these irrational false beliefs. So obviously the people that diagnosed her with schizophrenia think she believes it. But there also could be the possibility that she's just completely snows everyone. So, and that's definitely a thing too. I mean, the Son of Sam was diagnosed with schizophrenia and then came out later saying that he never heard from a dog. That was all a lie, all made up. And he was diagnosed, right? So it's not impossible to fool people if you know what the criteria should be. They actually said the Son of Sam, Berkowitz, like studied psychology texts to learn how to play that diagnosis.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was a smart guy.
Yeah. And it's possible that she did this kind of thing too, right? Or at least was knowledgeable enough that she knew what she could get away with.
Oh yeah.
Although a diagnosis never really benefited her, right? For Berkowitz, he did try to plead insanity. It didn't work, but he tried.
Yeah, and he's supposedly this reformed Christian now. He goes by Brother David.
His website is absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. He calls himself the Son of Hope now.
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, it's like, how narcissistic are you where you're no longer killing people, but you still have to have a title? Because I go to church and
you don't call yourself
other than the minister, nobody there has a title. No, I don't call myself anything. I'm still just Ben.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, you know, like with Dorothea, I have no doubt whatsoever. If she hadn't been caught, she would still be doing the same thing. I mean, she probably would have had to buy the property next door to her because, you know, she'd run out of room for bodies. One thing I don't understand is how in the hell she was able to get the bodies buried. Because, I mean, she wasn't young. And she's not a big lady. So how in the hell did she drag those people down to wherever that, you know, or up? Because I think most of them lived in the basement area. So it's just like, did she have help that we don't know about?
That's what I was going to say, is like the cops don't seem to have gone through everything as well as they should have. Because it's like, she probably had to have had an accomplice. Because she would, like, and if she it did, would be hard. Means... Look, you and me aren't old.
Right.
It would be really hard. I mean, I don't know the time span between the deaths, but seven like sizably deep graves, right? Like that would be difficult.
Yeah.
And because it would take her longer, you have way more opportunity time-wise to be caught, right?
Right.
Like, if you're like a strong, strapping dude and you can dig a 6-foot hole in like 45 minutes, that's 45-minute window. That lady probably spent like entire nights digging holes. It's like, how?
She would have to.
Yeah.
She would have to, absolutely. Because, I mean, it would probably take me half a day to dig a hole, you know, the size to put a body in. I mean, I'm not in great shape, but I'm fairly strong still. But, yeah.
I mean, she was old.
Yeah. But, I mean, going back to the accomplice thing.
And small. She's not a big lady.
No, she's not a big lady at all. But, I mean, her delusions had to be massive, if that's what it really was, because she would have had to not only not know that she killed these people, but not know that she had an accomplice to help her do it, or at least dispose of the bodies. I mean, that's...
You know, I actually have a theory.
Okay.
Now, this is going to be a little out there. This might put me in the realm of schizophrenic, so bear with me here.
Okay.
My theory is that she had accomplices, multiple, and each accomplice also became a victim. So she would get someone to like fall for her. She would get them to help her get rid of one, and then she would get rid of the other with the other one, and they kind of took each other out. And probably about the time that you went from accomplice to victim was when you said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I'm telling, right? Then now you're the next one.
Yeah, I mean, or even they were just completely unaware and she's telling them to dig up a rose garden for her so she can plant flowers. I mean, I don't know why.
And obviously that couldn't be true. That couldn't be true for all of the victims because like she was drugging the woman, right? Obviously that woman wasn't accomplice to anything.
Oh, she poisoned all of them.
Yeah.
All of her victims.
But I think some of the dudes that like were dating her that disappeared, or her ex-husband that disappeared, one of them was her ex-husband that disappeared, like accomplice. That would be my guess. Which is bad to say because now people are going to be like, oh my gosh, you're blaming these victims and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if you think about it just logically, how could this woman move the bodies, let alone dig the hole, get the bodies in the hole, and there's no other people that the police are looking at? Why would that be? Because they're dead and the police know that, but they don't want to throw shade on the victims.
Awesome. I mean, honestly, I don't think that her victims were accomplices, because I mean, more than half of them are women.
Yeah.
Like older women.
I know Bert was a bigger dude. And I'm not trying, like I said, I'm not trying to throw shade on the victim, but I don't know. I'm just speculating. He was a bigger dude, and you did say, which is true, that he had some
he was schizophrenic.
He had issues, right? Yeah. He wasn't normal. He might have been someone she could have controlled. And even if that's true, that doesn't make him really a bad person. That makes him controlled, right? So
right.
I don't know. But yeah, that's just a theory. But the real point of it is what you were saying, which is just in the world of physics, I don't think she could have moved these bodies and put them in holes that she dug.
I don't know. I mean, maybe we're wrong. My grandma was pretty damn strong when she was, you know, before she got sick. So who knows? Yeah. Who knows? But I tell you, one thing I would like to do is end this on a positive note and just talk about or just at least name her victims. We shouldn't end talking about Miss Granny. So we had Ruth Monroe, who was 61. That was a woman she took in as a business partner and a roommate. Everson Gilmouth, who was 77, the one she tricked into loving her. Poor guy. Alvaro Bert Montoya, 51. His makes me the saddest, I think. Dorothy Miller, 64. Benjamin Fink, 55. Betty Palmer, 78. Vera Faye Martin, 64. James Gallup, 62. Very, very sad.
Yes. That's just amazing how she was able to... Yeah. I don't know. It's amazing how she was able to do that.
I don't understand a lot of people, I guess, but.
I mean, how did she move Bert Montoya?
I don't know. I have no idea, because he's a bigger dude. He was a bigger dude. But at least they're not suffering, and I don't think she caused them pain. I think, you know, it was just a, she poisoned them for their money, unfortunately, for their pension checks. Sad, sad thing.
Am I remembering wrong, or didn't she did? She did cut parts, right? Cut body parts. No. So she had to have moved
actual full body. It's just, it's mind boggling.
Yeah.
How she accomplished that.
Well, all of her victims, may you all rest in peace. I think that's a good place to end for today for this horrible woman. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Mandy.
And I'm Ben.
Mr. Playboy Ben. No, just kidding. sorry, I couldn't resist. If you want to get in touch with us, our email is throughtheabysspodcast@gmail.com. You can also link up with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at abysspodcast1. Have a great day.
Toodaloo.
Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff.